Not all monsters are myths.
Michigan Monsters.
This is Michigan Monsters. A true crime gothic.
Oh, hi. Welcome to Michigan, where the lakes are salt-free, the monsters are human, and the sky is the limit. I'm Jen Carpenter, and today we're going to talk about some good news for a change. I know, weird, right? But I feel like we could all use a little breath of fresh air. And I initially had really different plans for this episode, but as I sat down and started writing, when I got to the point where we were going to kind of change gears and go from feel-good vibes to dark and depressing, I just didn't want to do it. I changed my mind. We can talk about Michigan history that doesn't end in tragedy once in a while, right? I feel like this is episode 116, so one out of 116 episodes. That's not bad, right? All right. So as I'm sitting down to record this episode, we are fresh off NASA's successful Artemis II Michigan. Yep. Artemis II Michigan. There it is. We are fresh off NASA's successful Artemis II mission, the first time that humans have been to the moon in over 50 years. And we get to talk about it here on this Michigan-centric podcast because there just so happened to be a woman from Michigan on the mission. First of all, okay, let's get this out of the way. I know nothing about space, and I'm also terrible at science. Only class I ever failed in high school was physics. I won every spelling bee that I was ever in, except one, because the word dissect has no business having two S's in it, which, come to think of it, that is a science-y word, dissect. Damn it, got me again. I could spell Czechoslovakia at the age of 7, and that's not even a country anymore. I was in the Gifted and Talented program my entire elementary school career, of course. I even got put in like the fancy, special, math-specific Gifted and Talented program that was exclusively for 5th graders when I was in 4th grade. I want to call it Mathletes, but I know that that's from Mean Girls. If I remember correctly, it was called Merge, like M-E-R-G-E, and that stood for something, and I have no idea what. But yeah, so I was smart, okay? I was a smart kid. But start getting science-y on me, and my brain turns to absolute mush. So I'm going to approach today's episode from a storytelling aspect, not a scientific aspect. What does that mean? It means that if you really know a lot about NASA and space travel, you are probably going to hate this episode. But if, like me, you're intimidated by all that fancy smart people talk, but you're also really interested, this might be like an Artemis II mission breakdown for dummies. Let's just call it that. Me being dummy number one. Hey now, I have been to the Kennedy Space Center, okay? I didn't understand a damn thing anyone was talking about, but I went. My husband went to space camp as a kid twice. That's got to count for something, right? I learned so much researching this episode, starting with the fact that I had no idea that we hadn't sent anyone to the moon since the 1970s. I guess I don't really pay attention to, like, you know, there's all these different things, the Mars rovers and the unmanned spacecrafts and the visits to the space station. When we're going to space, I'm just picturing the moon and yeah, I never really put a lot of thought into it. So I didn't realize until after it was over what a big deal the Artemis II mission was. If you, like me, were born after 1972, this was the first time in your lifetime that humans have traveled to the moon. Every single space mission that you remember has just been to the low Earth orbit, or the region of space that is closest to the Earth's surface. That's where, like, all the satellites are, the International Space Station is, All the sky trash. That's where that all is. And that's as far as we've gone. Xennials, millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, and even a good portion of Gen X. Until now. The Artemis II mission was historic, not just because it's the first time we've been to the moon in over half a century, but because it was the first time a woman has ever been on a moon mission. And because it's the furthest into space humans have ever traveled before. So the fact that one of the four people on board, the first woman to ever fly to the moon, one of four humans to go where no man or woman has ever gone before, is from little old Michigan? Amazing. Even more amazing, this wasn't her first time making history. Christina Hammack was born on January 29, 1979, in Sparta, Michigan, a little village just north of Grand Rapids, about a 20-minute drive from the Lake Michigan coastline. When Christina was five, she and her family relocated to Jacksonville, North Carolina, but still returned home to Michigan to visit family. She would come spend summers with her grandparents to help them on their farm, stuff like that, and she still has family in the area today. Christina grew up dreaming of becoming an astronaut. It is all she ever wanted to do with her life. She graduated from high school in 1997 and enrolled at North Carolina State University, where she earned two bachelor's degrees, one in electrical engineering and one in physics, and a master's degree in electrical engineering. In 2001, at the age of 22, Christina completed the NASA Academy program at Goddard Space Flight Center in Washington, D.C., which is also where she began her career as an engineer. In 2004, when she was just 25, Christina joined the United States Antarctic Program and spent the next several years at some of the most remote research stations in the Arctic tundra. The isolation, limited resources, going long periods without seeing the sun, working with the same small crew for weeks or months on end, having to ration food and supplies, being cut off from the rest of the world for long stretches. Everything Christina endured while working as a researcher at the ends of the Earth prepared her for her next big adventure, leaving Earth entirely. In 2013, when she was 34, Christina was selected by NASA as part of Astronaut Group 21, a group of four men and four women chosen from a pool of over 6,000 eligible applicants to become the new class of astronauts. This is something NASA does about every 4 years or so not super often. The Eight Balls, as their group was called, I read a thing that said like the previous class gets to name the next class, and their class was named the Eight Balls. They went through 2 years of rigorous training, including learning how to fly fighter jets, before being added to the rotation of astronauts eligible for assignments. 2013 is also the year that Christina met her husband, Bob Cook, a geospatial engineer. But this is not about him. In 2019, when she was 40 years old, Christina Hammack Cook's lifelong dream came true. She got to go to outer space. She was part of a three-person crew that took the Soyuz M12 capsule up to the International Space Station. Christina's first trip to space was record-breaking. She was up there for 328 days, setting the record for the longest amount of time a woman has ever spent in space. While there, she participated in the first ever girls-only spacewalk with fellow astronaut Jessica Meir. After nearly a year on the International Space Station, where one of her objectives was to study the effects of long stretches of time in space on the female body, Christina Cook returned to Earth on February 6, 2020, just in time for the entire world to shut down due to COVID. Can you imagine? Can you even imagine being like, oh my God, I've been living in isolation for a year. I can't wait to just like go sit in a movie theater and go out to eat and just go hang out with all my friends. She got home, and by the time she got her bearings, the whole world was on lockdown. What a nightmare. Listen, if you're a youngster, a youth, if you will, 40 probably sounds ancient to you. Life has passed you by. Stick me in the retirement home. But those of us on the other side of that milestone age will tell you that we are really just teenagers stuck in the bodies of middle-aged women. So at the age of 40, to have been to Antarctica and outer space, changing the world and breaking records, Christina Cook is an absolute legend. I'm proud of myself if I remember to wash my face before bed, okay? So if Christina had decided to stop there, who could blame her? After spending decades doing super important research all over the planet, she spent almost an entire year in outer space doing more super important research, only to come home and find that we'd destroyed her home planet with our nasty germs and had to shut the entire world down for a couple years. Like, goodbye, I'm done with you people. I would just retire and go buy a lake house somewhere. Now, here's the part where I was going to say, I'm sure she could afford it, because I assumed that astronauts make pretty good money, but then I looked it up just to see what kind of money we were talking about. And look, I guess it's all relative, okay? According to the Google, astronauts typically make between $90,000 and $150,000 a year. Now, I would like to make $150,000 a year as a struggling bookseller and podcaster. It's certainly not chump change, but I definitely expected them to make more than that, considering the sort of work they do, the education it requires to do that work. They have a very particular set of skills, okay? I don't know. That just kind of surprised me, that number. I don't know. Anyway, lucky for us, Christina Cook wasn't yet satisfied with her big, exciting life full of accomplishments and broken records. She wanted more. And boy, did she find it. Before we talk about Christina Cook's latest adventure, I want to go over a few space facts that I will make as non-sciencey as possible. And maybe you guys all know these, but almost all of this was news to me. This one is just kind of for reference because I have to be able to like visualize and like compare when I'm trying to picture something, especially something that's foreign to me. So outer space is universally recognized at something called the Kármán line, which is 62 miles above the Earth's surface. For reference, commercial airplanes typically fly about 6 miles up, military jets around 12 miles up. And the lower Earth orbit, where the International Space Station and most of our satellites live, starts at about 100 miles up and goes all the way to 1,200 miles up. So between the airplanes and the satellites, you've got the Kármán line. There are some other orbits beyond the lower Earth orbit, but I'm not your science teacher. I'm not your relaxation app, and all of our space missions for the past 50 years have stopped at the lower Earth orbit, so we don't need to talk about another sky landmark until we get to the moon, which is 238,900 miles from Earth. So a trip on a celebrity space cruise just barely breaks the Kármán line at the 62-mile mark. Like, they go just over 62 miles. Most space missions, even the long ones, don't go more than like 1,000 miles from home. They're in part of that lower Earth orbit. But to get to the moon, you have to travel damn near 250,000 miles. And then you have to come back, or I should say you get to come back if you're lucky, right? If all goes well. So that is almost 500,000 miles round trip to go to the moon, which is insane. One of the many, many, many things that I learned researching this episode is that the Artemis II is not the name of the spacecraft. It is the name of the mission. So like Apollo 1, Apollo 2, Apollos 3 through 12, those were not, in fact, the names of all of the ships that blew up trying to get us to the moon, as I previously thought, Those were the names of the different missions. The spacecrafts all have their own unique names that nobody ever remembers. So for this mission, Artemis II is the name of the mission. The type of spacecraft is an Orion multi-purpose crew vehicle. They just call it an Orion. And then the name that the crew gave this particular Orion is the Integrity. And this is probably something I should have already known, but I didn't. I just always thought that the name that they use when talking about the mission, Artemis II, Apollo 13, that was the name of the spacecraft, but it is not. And I have this theory. I was so interested, and I found all of the things that I researched for this episode so fascinating. And I was just like, why has this always been a topic that you've avoided? I don't really watch like a lot of the documentaries on space. I don't watch the launches. I don't follow along with the live streams super close when there's a mission happening. And I think it's because I'm so bad at science. So when they get to talking about these things, I feel so stupid that my brain just kind of shuts off. It's like, oh, nope, girl, this is not for you. Go watch some Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. Okay. No. But like, I think that's the reason. I think it's because I was intimidated because science is hard for me. And a lot of the stuff they talk about is so scientific that my brain just kind of rejected the topic altogether. But researching it in a way that I could retell it from a storyline standpoint, I was just fascinated by all the things I was learning. I'm a space girl now, for sure. I've always been a space cadet. Now I'm a space girl. And as a newly initiated space girl, let's talk about the Apollo program for a quick little minute. Project Apollo was NASA's first human spaceflight program, which ran from 1961 to 1972. The objective was simple: to land man on the moon and get him back safely. That goal was first accomplished in 1969 with the successful Apollo 11 mission that landed Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon. And it ended with the Apollo 17 mission in 1972, the last time that man ever set foot on the moon, and the last time, until recently, that a spacecraft even went anywhere near the moon. Of course, the most famous Apollo mission was the disastrous Apollo 13, which Tom Hanks already told you all about, so I don't need to do that today, except for this one thing. Did you know that in real life, they did not say, "Houston, we have a problem"? What they said was, "Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here." And your whole life has been a lie, just like that. You're welcome. Project Apollo ended in 1972 following the successful Apollo 17 mission due to budget cuts and a waning public interest in space travel once the space race had been won. So the whole mission of the Apollo project was to put a man on the moon. Once they did that, there was really nowhere to go, so they just kept putting men on the moon. They just kept going back over and over and over so close together that people are like, yeah, we get it. We've seen it. It's kind of boring now. And it's not boring. But you know what I mean? Like, we're fickle as a society and we have a short attention span. And once we'd seen it a couple times, like, is that all you got? What's next? And there was no next. That was the whole objective. So they just kind of stopped doing it. One last thing about Project Apollo. It was named, of course, after the Greek god Apollo, god of the sun, because the imagery of a chariot crossing the sun felt right to the powers that be. That little factoid matters because in Greek mythology, Apollo had a twin sister, the goddess of the moon, and her name was Artemis. So when NASA decided to fire up a new boots-on-the-ground moon exploration program decades after its first one ended, they couldn't think of a better name than the Artemis program. The objective of the Artemis program, which was formally established in 2017, is to return humans to the moon, establish a permanent outpost on the moon, and eventually conquer Mars. The first five Artemis missions were laid out as follows. Artemis 1, to send an unmanned craft to the moon, or rather, around it. This mission was successful and it took place in 2022. Fun fact, the Artemis 1 spacecraft was piloted by Commander Munikin Campos, a mannequin they dressed up in a full spacesuit and strapped into the commander's chair. From liftoff to splashdown, Commander Munikin Campos traveled 1.4 million miles. Oh my God, I just got it. I didn't know where the Munikin came. Mannequin. It was a mannequin, but he was going to the moon, so they named him Munikin. Get out of this town. Artemis 2, the mission, to send a crewed flight to the dark side of the moon and back, reaching a distance further than any manned spacecraft had ever traveled before. This mission was also successful, albeit majorly delayed, and it took place just a little minute ago. Just, you know, it's still on the news. So more on all of that in a few. Artemis 3, the mission is to test docking and landing gear. This was originally planned to happen on the moon in 2028. Now it's planned to happen in the lower Earth orbit in 2027. They haven't announced the crew for this one yet, but like if they had already been selected and started training and thought they were going to get to touch the moon and now they only get to go to Satellite City, that sucks so bad. Like that sucks. Artemis 4, touchdown. As of right now, Artemis 4 is planned for early 2028 with the goal of landing astronauts on the moon's south pole. NASA describes this mission as one of the most complex undertakings of engineering and human ingenuity in the history of deep space exploration. So, like, this is going to be huge. And then Artemis 5 is where things are going to start getting weird. This is the mission where we start building our outpost on the moon. As of right now, Artemis 5 is scheduled for late 2028. In all of these missions, NASA will be pushing its spacecrafts, technology, and astronauts further and further, testing the limits and then setting new ones, with the goal of being able to send humans to Mars sometime in the 2030s. So, every single one of these missions will be more dangerous than the one before it. I waited to record this episode until after the Artemis 2 splashdown so that I knew what kind of story we'd be talking about here, and luckily it is a happy one. Everything went as planned, and the four-person crew is now back on solid ground, reacclimating to gravity as we speak. Let's talk about that crew for a second. Commander Reed Wiseman, a 50-year-old widower and girl dad from Baltimore, is now the oldest person to ever travel to the moon. Pilot Victor Glover, age 49, from Pomona, California, is also a girl dad. He has four daughters, as well as the distinction of being the first black man to go to the moon. 50-year-old mission specialist Jeremy Hansen of London, Ontario, is the first Canadian to ever see the far side of the moon. He missed out on also being the oldest person in deep space by just about 2 months. Commander Wiseman is just a little bit older than him. And then our girl, mission specialist Christina Hammock Cook, age 47, the youngest member of the crew, and the first woman to ever go to the moon. That is quite a collection of trendsetters. An old dude, a black dude, a Canadian dude, and a woman going to space together? What is this world coming to? Now, let's talk about the mission at hand. Get it? Because we're talking about space missions? Okay. I could tell you about the mind-boggling science that goes into safely launching a 20,000-pound metal tube into the stratosphere, or about how the rocket assembly used for said launch is the size of Big Ben, you know that giant clock in London that Peter Pan and Wendy fly over? You know the one. Or about how the Integrity traveled at speeds of nearly 25,000 miles an hour on its way back to Earth. Or the strange and unpleasant mechanics behind using a toilet in space. But all of that would wind up getting real sciencey. So instead, I want to tell you about the human stories. The ones I saw first in clips on TikTok, because remember I told you I don't really follow all of this space stuff super closely. So everything I learned about this at first was against my will through my TikTok FYP. And the stuff I saw was just like, oh my gosh, like tugging on my heartstrings a little and piqued my interest in a way that these documentaries full of science jargon never did. As I previously mentioned, Commander Wiseman is a widower. His wife Carol died in 2020 after a long battle with cancer. And one of the first clips I saw from the Artemis II mission is where Mission Specialist Hansen asked Mission Control for permission to name a crater on the moon after Commander Wiseman's wife, Carol. He said, "There's a feature in a really neat place on the moon, and it's on the near side, far side boundary. In fact, it's just on the near side of the boundary. So at certain times of the moon's transit around Earth, we will be able to see this from Earth. And so we lost a loved one. Her name was Carol, the spouse of Reed, the mother of Katie and Ellie. It's a bright spot on the moon, and we would like to call it Carol." See, I can't even say it without tearing up. So because of the way that Mission Specialist Hansen's voice was like shaking all the way through it, I think people thought that it was her husband that gave this really beautiful little speech, but it was actually his crewmate. Commander Wiseman was just over there wiping his floating tears away, but the emotion shown by his crew over the death of his wife 6 years ago just really speaks to how close these space crews are, how close they have to be able to do something like travel to outer space together. Another tearjerker moment, and probably my absolute favorite for obvious reasons, was when Mission Control told Commander Reed that his daughters were there watching the live feed, and he floated over to the camera, held up the Swifty heart hands, and pointed to a Swifty friendship bracelet on his wrist. Cute, right? It gets cuter. Mission Control said, "Copy heart, copy bracelet," and I died. Like the Swifty in me died. I promise you, people are going to get tattoos of this. I might get a tattoo of this someday. So everything that the astronauts do and say, Mission Control responds with copy, right? Basically saying, got it. I heard you. So she was acknowledging that they saw him do the heart hands and show off his bracelet. And not only was it ridiculously adorable, but as someone who has been a Taylor Swift fan since Tim McGraw came out like 20 years ago, when people thought it was weird that I liked this teenage country singer so much, Swifty astronauts orbiting the moon showing off their friendship bracelets, Mission Control saying copy heart, copy bracelet, I can't handle it. I cannot handle it. It's too much. I've had enough. The best moment, though, the best moment had to be when they took that call from the commander in chief. The whole time that he was talking about, "I saved NASA," knowing that he has been pushing for massive budget cuts the entire presidency, telling them, like, America's the hottest country in the world right now, and they're not even all Americans on the shuttle. Like, you know, it was awkward, right? So the whole time he's talking, they're not talking back. They've got this microphone and it's just floating, right? Zero gravity. So the microphone's just floating in the middle of the group and they're batting it back and forth. And you can almost see them like, "You take it. No, you take it. No, you take it." And they're kind of laughing and almost kind of like talking quietly to each other, barely paying attention to Trump, if at all. And then he says, "We're very, very proud of you." And stops talking, leaves room for them to respond, right? And they did not. They did not. It is like a solid minute of just silence. The microphone floating in the middle, them kind of with these plastered smiles on their faces, glancing at each other, kind of looking at the camera. Nothing. Nobody speaks for like a full minute. eventually they give a thumbs up, but nobody's grabbing that microphone to say like, oh, thank you so much, Mr. President, which is clearly what he was waiting for because he doesn't talk either. The silence is so long and so loud. It is awkward as hell. But finally, Commander Wiseman takes the mic and he asks Mission Control to do a comm check to see if the president is still there. Because he's not talking. Nobody's talking. And Trump goes, I am. Yes, I am. And he sounds like almost dejected. And then the Mission Control starts laughing. Literally, there is an audible audience full of like laugh track laughter, but it's the Mission Control. I mean, look, he said himself, smart people don't like him very much. He keeps trying to slash NASA's budget. NASA keeps trying to slash NASA's budget by billions of dollars. He's always shitting on science and facts. And these are people that, if not technically scientists, are in very scientist-adjacent careers. It was so cringy and so hard to watch, but I loved it. One story going around that actually is not true. Well, it's kind of true, but not true. Well, just, okay. People are saying that they took hardware from the Challenger on board with them so that the Challenger crew could finally make it to space. Now, there is an entire list of heritage hardware, which is pieces and parts from other spacecrafts and other missions that were used to build the Orion and the shuttle launch system. Listen, space travel? Expensive. Gotta reuse resources where you can. But there's the list. There's an official list. And none of those reused parts came from the Challenger. They did take a piece of the first Wright Brothers plane up with them. And there was heritage hardware from the Columbia disaster, which that crew did make it to space, but they didn't make it back. The confusion seems to be in some reused hardware that was used for the rocket boosters that came from a 1983 Challenger mission. But those were not reused 3 years later during the 1986 Challenger mission, which is the one that scarred us all for life, right? So parts from a Challenger rocket, yes, but not parts from the Challenger rockets that were used on that final ill-fated Challenger flight. Does that matter? Tomato, tomato, whatever. I'm just sharing the facts with you guys. Another super adorable moment was when Commander Reed was first reporting what he was seeing back to Mission Control. And he was just completely awestruck, right? This 50-year-old man who's been training for this for decades, completely, completely beside himself. He just kept saying things like, oh my God, it's unbelievable. This is incredible. And you can just hear like the pure excitement and joy in his voice. And the Mission Control operator said back, copy Moon Joy. Copy Moon Joy? So I guess NASA has been using the term now all over their social media, kind of making it their new catchphrase, I guess, which makes sense because we're going to be going to the moon a lot. So Moon Joy is a new thing, and people are already getting tattoos of that. I've seen it online. One of the best moments, though, came from our girl, Christina Cook, when she was making a video and she said, we would never be here if it weren't for so many people that came before us. Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan. Katherine Johnson and Dorothy Vaughan are two of the women featured in the book that later became a movie called Hidden Figures, about Black women who worked at NASA as mathematicians and played a crucial role in helping the U.S. win the space race, all while working in subpar conditions due to segregation. Of course, they were relegated to the shadows, their contributions minimized and/or ignored altogether, other people took credit for their work, all of that kind of shit. Hence the name of the book and the movie, Hidden Figures. So to have their names spoken aloud in deep space, to have them acknowledged in that way, by the first woman to ever orbit the moon whilst she is actively orbiting the moon, get out of this town. Like, I cannot with these people. I cannot. The recognition was long overdue and well-deserved. also well-deserved. All of the good things Christina Cook has coming her way, whether she hangs up her spacesuit in the near future or stays with NASA for another 2 decades. Like, she just deserves all the best. Christina lives in Texas with her husband and their dog, Sadie. There's already a video out there of Sadie welcoming her mom home from the moon, by the way. And if you haven't seen it yet, I suggest you save it for a rainy day. It's so good. So good. Now, here's where, originally, I was going to change gears and tell you all about space shuttle disasters and their connections to Michigan. But you know what? I'm not going to do it. I like the vibe of this episode, and I don't want to ruin it. I will save those stories for another time. But Jen, you might be thinking, where is the Michigan Monster in this episode? You can't have a podcast called Michigan Monsters without talking about Michigan Monsters. I already told you about her. Christina Cook is a beast. End of story. If you've enjoyed today's very off-the-cuff, off-brand episode, as your resident bookstore owner, I have a few reading recommendations. Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid is a novel about when women first started being allowed into NASA's astronaut program, and it was my favorite book of 2025. So I guess what I'm learning about myself is I like this space stuff a lot more than I thought. I was just always really intimidated by it because science is hard. But it was such a good book. Highly, highly recommend. No spoiler alerts, but I do have a funny story about it. So I was listening to it on audiobook, and I was on the last couple chapters of the book one night while I was at the bookstore kind of doing after hours work, right? Like straightening, getting the store kind of reset and ready for the weekend. Well, it just so happened to be Halloween. Is Halloween go time for me? Yes, that, you know, busy season, all of the things. But by actual Halloween, especially when it falls on a weekday, like all of my events, all of my things are over and we're already like resetting for Christmas mode by Halloween. So picture it, right? It's Halloween night, after hours, the whole neighborhood is dark, my store is closed, I'm there alone, stocking and straightening and cleaning, listening to the very emotional end of this book that I love. And I am sobbing, like full heaving, like wouldn't be able to get a sentence out, crying. And I just had the thought where like, the front of my store is wall-to-wall windows. If someone walks by and sees me here, I'm alone in my store on Halloween night, just bawling my eyes out. Like, how embarrassing. I don't think anybody saw me, but it would have been funny if they did. Anyway, great book. Highly recommend it. And then there are some nonfiction books about women in space as well. There is, of course, the previously mentioned Hidden Figures and a book called The Six. And we carry all of those books and more at Deadtime Stories in Lansing. If you prefer to listen to audiobooks, rather than use Audible, I would just like to kindly suggest that you guys make the switch to a platform called Libro.fm. It's Libro.fm. That is what I use. And basically, it works the same way that Audible does. You can buy books individually, or you can do like a monthly subscription where you get 1 credit a month that's good for any book. They have all the same books almost entirely, except for those Audible exclusives. Audible is owned by Amazon, so if you have an Audible account, every time you buy an Audible book, you're supporting Amazon, which the more this world hurdles itself toward end days, the more we know that like we need to be investing our money in small businesses, not the big corporations and the evil Amazon empire, right? So one way to get away from that would be to make the switch to Libro.fm from Audible. Libro.fm, when you're setting up your account, you pick your home bookstore. Deadtime Stories is on there. If you want to choose that, great. I'd appreciate it. If not, pick your local independent bookstore, your favorite independent bookstore. And every time you make a purchase, every time your monthly subscription credit runs, that bookstore gets a portion of those proceeds. So it's really cool. If you prefer ebooks, or if you're not local and you need a book shipped to you, again, rather than using Amazon or buying it on your Kindle, there is a website called bookshop.org, and it kind of works the same way as Libro. It supports independent bookstores. So when you set up your account, you pick your home bookstore, and every purchase you make, a portion of those proceeds goes to that bookstore. So they do ebooks and they do physical books that they mail right to you. There are links to our Libro FM and our bookshop.org accounts on the Dead Time Stories website. But if you just go to Libro FM or go to bookshop.org as you're setting up your account, when it's time to pick your bookstore, if you just type in Dead Time Stories, that'll pull it up too. Okay, end of that. Sales pitch over. I don't do that very often, but every once in a while, right? We're talking about books. Okay, last couple things. This is the April 15th episode. It is therefore the last episode before our mini hiatus. Back when the podcast was rocking and rolling, I took off May and I took off September every year, and that is still the case. So May is my month off. I'm actually going on a trip, which my husband and I have not been on a vacation together since before COVID. I think in 2019, right? While our girl Christina was up at the International Space Station, we went to Florida. We went to Disney with the kids last time that we all took a big family trip together, and then the world shut down, and there's just always been a reason that we couldn't leave at the same time. You know, we've got a busy life here. My husband works, he's going to school, I own the bookstore, we've got kids, we've got a million pets at the house and at the bookstore, so it's real hard for us both to leave at the same time. But we celebrated our 15th anniversary this year. My birthday is just a couple weeks away if you're listening to this on release day. And his birthday was just a few weeks ago. So it's our joint birthday present to each other / 15th anniversary gift to each other. And we're getting the hell out of Dodge for a little bit. Where are we going? We are going to the best place on earth, of course. Hollywood. I told you guys, I'm obsessed with it and I have to live there. And if it's been too long since I've been there, I don't know how to describe it to you, right? We all go on vacations where we have a great time and we've been somewhere that we love and we want to go back there again. This isn't that for me. I actually need to be out there, and I can't explain it other than to tell you that I have never more firmly believed in past lives than I did the first time I walked out into the atmosphere of the Hollywood Hills. Something just clicked in my soul and I was like, oh, yep, this is the place you are supposed to be. And I just have to be there. I just have to go often, not as often as I would like. And someday I will relocate out there. It's dirty, it's gross, it's weird. The cost of living is stupid expensive, but I have to be there. What else to tell you about it? Anyway, so the podcast will be back on June 1st. Don't freak out and think I disappeared again when there's no new content in May. That is by design, and that's the way I've kind of always done it. So yeah, that's it for me today. My sources for today's episode were the NASA website, the National Air and Space Museum website, good old Wikipedia, which was then followed up by some rigorous fact-checking, way too much news coverage, it's all over the place. It just happened. So there's tons of Artemis II news coverage and information out there right now, and I was just kind of pulling it from all over the place. And of course, my favorite source for news these days, TikTok. We all know how accurate that is, right? So for even more, for some Great Lakes true crime, because there was no true crime in this episode here, be sure to check out this week's episode of Already Gone, wherever you get your podcasts. To keep up with all things Michigan Monsters, you can find me on Facebook and Instagram under Michigan Monsters Podcast, on TikTok under It's Jen Carpenter, and online at MichiganMonstersPodcast.com. I'm Jen Carpenter, and I'll see you when I come back on June 1st. Until then, remember to keep your doors locked, even during the daytime. because not all monsters hide in the dark. Copy heart, copy bracelet, copy moon joy.